Okay, well, thanks for sticking around. So the first third of a talk is a repetition of a repetition of a repetition, so I think we can go through there very quickly. So this is work done with Herbie and Bill, both in the audience, and Peter Thomas of, where's the button on this thing? There we go, of the Salk Institute. And what I'm gonna talk about is the first part of the sensing mechanism in cells. So I'm going to talk about the first few seconds when a chemotractant signal is presented to the cell. So I'm not going to talk about adaptation, construction of a cytoskeleton, and so on and so on. So this is what our motivation was. So I can skip all of this. You've seen this ad nausea. So I'm going to talk mostly about dictyostelium, where the chemotractant is cyclic AMP. This I should say mention because this is somewhat important. This is distribution of the receptors on the membrane, and you can see that they're uniformly distributed along the cell. Somebody asked that question yesterday. You can see that they're uniform. Okay, so this is in developing cells. Just to remind you, Bill talked about this. You get these cyclic AMP waves that which result then in spiral waves. That's the movie. What's the movie? Okay, so this was also shown yesterday. So what we're going to focus on is the very first part of the signaling mechanism. Very first few seconds. So if the wave is coming along, how does the cell break its symmetry? That's what we'd like to find out. Okay, so as I said, after this symmetry has been broken, all better things can happen. It can be amplified, it can be stabilized, and I'm not going to address this at all. All right. Okay, so we were motivated by experiments by the Devriotis lab. This has been, I don't know if this one has been shown, they're all variation of the same theme, of course. Cyclic AMP is presented on this side. Frames are taken every 2 seconds. And what you see is that these pH domain proteins jump onto the membrane very quickly. Now, you should know that the diffusion constant of cyclic AMP is rather large. And if you calculate how long it takes to diffuse across one cell diameter, it's less than 1 second. So these pH domains are jumping on the membrane within 1 or 2 seconds. Within a second, the cyclic AMP has reached appreciable levels in the back of the cell. So something must have happened. Yes? Inside the cell? Well, here I'm talking about cyclic AMP, which is diffusing outside the cell. Right? But it has been measured also inside cells, which is an important point. Okay. So this is the same thing, except now that you have a uniform stimulus. And again, it jumps on the membrane very rapidly. And again, frames are taken every 2 seconds, also from Devriotis' lab. Okay, this is just a still picture of the same thing. So this is -6 seconds, -4, -2, 0. Lift off, and there you see that the thing jumps onto the membrane. It goes really quickly. This is the time trace. I don't know if you can see it, but it peaks at less than 10 seconds. Okay. And of course, Henry has shown this also, or variants of that. The same thing happens, of course, in neutrophils. As you can see, it's a repetition of a repetition so far. Okay, so this is maybe part of the pathway, maybe not, but at least we know that cyclic AMP binds to this CAR1 receptor, which is G protein associated receptor. The G protein dissociates, it modifies the membrane, it makes this PIP3, and the crack can bind to the PIP3. Okay. And I'll come back to this picture later on. Okay. So the important thing to remember is that this asymmetry, which you can see in the experiments, is observed very rapidly. We also know that these signals that are coming out of the pipette are very strong. They're well above threshold. They put 1 micromolar or more in these pipettes, so it's a very strong signal. I've also shown you that these CAR1 receptors are uniformly distributed along the membrane, so it's not an intrinsic distribution of asymmetric distribution of these receptors. I've also argued the cyclic AMP diffuses rapidly around the cell. So how can it be that this cell establishes such an asymmetry so quickly? That's the basic question we wanted to address. Okay, so what we propose is that there is an intracellular mechanism that acts as an inhibitor, which actually suppresses the localization of pH domains at the back of the cell. All right, that's our idea. So to be specific, we're going to assume that there's an intracellular messenger that is also diffusing. It's diffusing at the interior of the cell. And what is resulting from this is there's a competition between the messenger at the exterior of the cell, which is diffusing, and the second messenger, which is an inhibitor, which is diffusing at the interior of the cell. And they're racing, so to speak, towards the back of the cell. And depending on the sensitivity of the back of the cell, the sensitivity to the inhibitor, you can either inhibit localization or you can fail to inhibit the localization. Okay. So that is, in a nutshell, our model. So what about this inhibitor? Well, what I show you in the remainder of the talk could be done with any inhibitor. We're not going to be too specific. We do have an idea what this inhibitor could be for DICTI. It could be cyclic GMP. Why do we think that is? Well, it needs to be something that is produced rapidly, obviously. And here's the data from Trainer et al., which shows the cyclic GMP production as a function of time, and you can see it goes up very rapidly. Yeah. There is some other data which is indicating that cyclic GMP is actually a very good candidate, and I'll come back to that later. Okay. All right, so what we're proposing that upon binding of cyclic AMP to the receptor, guanyl cyclase, which produces cyclic GMP, is activated, and the cyclic GMP is actually inhibiting the localization of crack via an inhibitory pathway like this. Now, we're not going to be specific about that. We have some ideas, but we don't quite know if it's correct or not. Okay, so now let's describe our model. I'm not going to be very mechanistic. I think, and I'll come back to that later, I think the good thing about our model is that it makes a certain amount of specific predictions that can easily, or not, maybe I shouldn't say easily, but it can at least be verified. And that means, of course, that it can be shut down also. That's the risk you take, but at least you might make some progress. So we're going to characterize the membrane by three states. So membrane can be in three states. Quiescent, nothing happens. Activated or inhibited. And the transitions between those three states are mediated by cyclic AMP, that's coming from the outside, and the intracellular cyclic GMP, which is the inhibitor. Or if cyclic GMP does not turn out to be the inhibitor, it could be the other inhibitor, X.
The famous X. A point on the membrane in these three states.
Right.
Whole membrane.
No.
It varies around the membrane.
Well, we're going to
the concentration of these states varies around the membrane.
Yeah, the way we're doing it computation, of course, is we're going to discretize the membrane in a set of points.
Right.
Yes. Right. Okay. The activated state of the membrane is actually responsible for the localization of the pH domain proteins, which we're not going to model per se. Also, we are going to assume that cyclic GMP is diffusing in the interior, as of course, and cyclic AMP is diffusing in the exterior. Okay, and for the next couple slides, I'm going to only look at two-dimensional systems. At the end, I will say something about three-dimensional modeling. So I think it's kind of relevant maybe for physicists. Okay, so here's the schematic a little bit more. So here's like, say, you're looking at one point of the membrane. We have our three states. If nothing is happening, everything is in the quiescent state. So if you present it with cyclic AMP, I'm going to be linearly stimulated towards the activated state. This then can also go to inhibitor state via a constant conversion. This thing is not working very well anymore. There you go. Okay. This activated state, like I said, is responsible for... This activated state, we're going to assume that that is also producing cyclic GMP, the inhibitor. The quiescent state, however, can also be directly brought into the inhibitor state via cyclic GMP. And finally, we want to go back into the quiescent state eventually, so there has to be a constant conversion from inhibited to quiescent. And this activated state is also responsible for binding of pH to main proteins and maybe other downstream events. So this is our model. So how do we do this in two dimensions? So we have some computational domain here. We can introduce some source of cyclic AMP. We introduce our ellipsoid. In this case, it's a circle. The cyclic GMP can diffuse internally. Cyclic AMP diffuses externally. So we have to solve diffusion equations for those things. And on the membrane, I have discrete points which represent these three states. And these states are conserved. So if I add the density of quiescent state plus activated state plus inhibited state, it has to be 1. I just normalize to 1 and it's conserved. So the way we solve this in this particular case was via a finite element grid. So here are our little points. These little yellow dots are the discrete states nodes in which I solve these three membrane states. Okay. All right. Okay, so what do we get? Well, suppose I presented with the uniform pulse of cyclic AMP. I first traced here the production. Yes, so that means that's right. So basically this whole blue area here, at one point I say boop, it's raise it to some level and that's it.
Oh, it's not just around the circumference, in the whole
bulk. The whole thing, right. So I get, as a result of that, I get production of cyclic GMP. It peaks at 10 seconds. The way I do this is because I adjust some of my parameters to make it peak at 10 seconds, and it decays. And this is what happens to my density of states. Of course, now it's completely uniform. It's completely symmetric, so any state, it looks the same. I start all in the quiescent state. It's the blue one. I present a cyclic AMP signal. Most of it goes into the activated state. And then finally, slowly, it gets converted into the inhibited state. OK, so this is the uniform pulse. But of course, I would like to explain the asymmetric pulse. And this is a little movie which goes way too fast. I don't know how to slow it down, actually. So what I do here is I present it with a cyclic AMP pulse here. So at this side of my boundary, I just raise the cyclic AMP concentration. And then it diffuses towards the cell, which is the circle. And what you see, this white here, is just the characterization of the activated state. So black is 0 and 1, and white is close to 1, is maximum.
And is activated on the right hand side?
Well, that's exactly the point. And right, why not? Because
the inhibitor.
That's right.
Oh, I see. This is with the inhibitor.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
I thought you were just doing the straight diffusion.
No, so there's the whole thing. So the whole full enchilada here, right. So the cyclic AMP is diffusing, hitting the cell boundary here. Along the cell boundary here, most of it goes into the activated state. But this activated state is producing an inhibitor, cyclic GMP. That thing is diffusing towards the back, and I've made it such that my transition rate is such that here nothing happens, essentially. Yeah, that's all. No. Well, true, I'll show you three dimension in a little bit, but you can still play a little bit with these rates, right? I mean, you have these conversion rates between the activated and inhibited state and quiescent state, so there's still quite a bit of wiggle room here.
I don't understand what you're doing here. You're starting it over.
Yes. It's looping.
A long time.
It's looping. It's looping. So.
No, I understand.
Okay.
So you don't know what it is at long time, but you probably do know.
Well, at long time, it just decays back to the quiescent state.
Well, because this was a pulse.
It was a pulse. Right. Okay. Right. So, it goes too fast. I know that. I have to find a way of. All right, so this is the same thing, but now I've plotted it as a function of time. So on the left is between 0 and 20 seconds, and on the right is just the blob of that, the first second. And then there's quite a few lines on this graph. But maybe what you should focus on is this dashed black line, which is the density of activated state in the front, and this dashed red state, which is the dashed red line, which is the density of activated state in the back. And you can see that the front reaches a much higher level than the back. So one way of characterizing the asymmetry is to look at the peak of these two curves and divide them, and then you get an asymmetry ratio and an amplification ratio, and here it turns out to be 5. Okay, all right. So this is always somewhat of an issue. How sensitive are your is your model? Yeah, go ahead. Right, that's a good point. It is actually shown that within the cell, these small molecules diffuse very, very quickly. So here I've taken it to be the same. Yes?
So then, do you think they're literally diffusing, or do you think they're vacuum?
No, we think they're literally diffusing.
But the diffusion within the cell as compared to outside?
Well, right, but it has been shown that within the cell, the diffusion constant is essentially the same as outside the cell.
So, yes. Outside,
yes, yes, yes. That was the same thing as Pensol. That works in your favor. Absolutely, it works in your favor. But I'll show you in a minute. I'll show you a three-dimensional thing. So, yes. Okay.
What are the very rapid time scales in the initial response? What is very fixed? You get these really sharp increases at the beginning.
Yes.
Which reactions are those that are?
Because the cyclic AMP is binding to your receptor, so that activates right away the membrane. Okay, so I just want to show here that it is not too sensitive to my model parameters. I don't have to fool around with it too much. I'm varying all my parameters here twofold or fivefold, and I still can get a decent amount of amplification ratios. So it's not that I have picked the one space, one point in a five-dimensional parameter space that works. It's more than that. Okay, so again, this is in cartoon form, the model, how it works. Cyclic AMP is in the cell, in the front of the cell, it gets activated, produces cyclic GMP, which is diffusing towards the back, and it wins it from the cyclic AMP, which is diffusing around the cell, and brings it into the inhibitor state. Okay, so this is, I think, the crucial point here. Like I said, we can make a few very distinct and precise predictions coming from this model, which can be verified experimentally. And Eberhard will talk about this tomorrow. So they fall essentially in two categories. One is coming from the mechanism, so not specific to cyclic GMP being the inhibitor, and one is coming from the fact that we think cyclic GMP is the inhibitor. So first of all, we've been advertising this already for quite a little while. If there is indeed an inhibitor which is racing with the cyclic AMP along in the inside of the cell, the logical thing to do is not to give it a one pipette experiment, but do a two pipette experiment. You have something in the front and something in the back, and then you start varying at which time you release the chemoattractants. So, and of course, this will give you some insight in the time scales, and will actually tell you whether or not this thing works. Now, having two pipettes there and going like this is pretty difficult, especially since I've shown you that everything happens within the first 1 or 2 seconds. So what we are thinking one should do, and again, I think Eberhard is going to talk about this much more, you can do these microfluid experiments where you basically send in things from above at a pretty high flow rate. So your flow here in this small channel will be roughly laminar. And then you can, if you look at the cyclic AMP concentration across a cell, which you somehow have managed to implement here, and it sticks to it, so that's all the kind of technical details. You can give it a pulse on the left and a pulse on the right. All right, I think this is really dying. Right, you can a pulse on the left, a pulse on the right at different times. So what does the model predict? Well, this is, again, this asymmetry ratio, amplification ratio. Of course, if you give it at exactly the same time, the front and the back are the same. So then you get 1. If you delay the time too much, a very long time delay, there's definitely an asymmetry created. And in between, you get some kind of sigmoidal response. So if you would do this with these pH domain tagged, with green fluorescent tagged proteins, you would see that if you do it at a very short time delay, both sides will light up. If you wait too long, only one side should light up. So that's one prediction of the model. Also, what we're essentially saying here is that this initial 1 or 2 seconds is very important in establishing the asymmetry. Furthermore, we really need a temporal signal. You need to have that the front is seeing something higher than the back for a little while. So that means that if you have a static gradient, a true static gradient, these cells should not chemotax very well. So this thing is really, really, really dying. Does anybody have another one? No? Oh, there you go. Oh, I can't even reach this. How do you think that? Oh, okay. All right, anyway. So what we were predicting is that directional sensing should be absent in purely static spatial gradients. Now, this is actually very difficult to establish experimentally. How do we establish a purely static gradient? Because if you have a cell here and you try to establish a static gradient, at some point you have to do something like this, which means that the front is seeing, or if this is the front is seeing more than the back at some point. So this is very difficult. However, again, using these microfluidic experiments, you might be able to do this.
So some have already been done, right? Some of the microfluidic experiments, like there was one paper in Nature Cell Biology. Do they then observe that in the static gradients, the cells don't move?
No, I don't think they have looked at static gradients. Right, Eberhard? The only one I know of is this neutrophil experiment, but...
Also, it's only in particular that we expect static gradients.
They didn't feel like all they created a gradient. They didn't feel like it worried about the timing.
Like, they don't tell you how they have, when they turn the thing on, and how they... It just said we make a gradient, and then it starts migrating. Because digital migrating is correct. I mean, they have data where they show that it starts actually migrating as a gradient.
Right. Okay. Anyway, so,
yeah. Does your model say that forgetting static gradient at the very beginning, if it's static after the gradient is imposed, that is, the thing starts crawling in the right direction, now the gradient doesn't change?
That's okay.
Right. That's fine.
Now, will it keep on going?
Yeah. Presumably, yes.
And the reason is?
That's outside our computational interest. We are looking at the... No! Well, no, I shouldn't say interest. It's definitely of our interest, but outside of our... Hold on 1 second. Exactly. The model only addressed the first few seconds. I think this is a crucial point. I mean, you're absolutely right. This is a crucial point. I think what is going on afterwards is already so complicated. We don't even understand this. So,
so what? Assumption is that once it decides which way to go, it can remain stabilized essentially forever in a shallow spatial static gradient.
Right, which might need a lot of other.
But that initial decision for a naive cell, which is admittedly easier to get to make the stelium than in a neutrophil, as we already discussed the great other thing. But for a naive cell, initially deciding which way to go is strongly dependent on this timing and this temporal.
Right.
If your stelium ever naive, isn't it always making a little bit of cyclic AMP and sort of bathing its friends?
Well, there's a little basal level, yeah.
So what's the computational event without real experiments, the computational experiments is perfectly symmetric in a static gradient. That's the initial condition.
Yes, that would be, yes. So essentially this would be one way of doing it. Now, of course, I'm not exactly sure if this can be accomplished, but let's say you have again this microfluidic experiments and you put in some microchannel mixer, which basically is one of these pyramidal channel geometries that can create an arbitrary defined gradient. So suppose you do the following experiment. This is your cell again, and you're measuring the cyclic AMP level across the cell. So you start off with nothing. All right, here we go. So you start off with nothing. You raise it uniformly to some level, high level, and then you slightly tilt this gradient, right? So.
So I don't understand how you claim that this is not a temporal.
Because right here you already have activated everything essentially. That's what we're saying, and then you impose a small gradient. Right? Which is different than saying, okay, I'm going to impose a small gradient, but I first open my pipette here, in which case your front will see some cyclic AMP while the back has essentially nothing. That's a big difference.
It's a on top of a base.
On top of a large base. So instead of doing this slowly, you do this and then like this.
Yeah, but as long as you're raising, I mean, what a cell senses is a differential. So if you have a constant concentration, let's say concentrated cyclic AMP, you've responded and adapted to that particular concentration. If you then raise it, it's the same as increasing the delta from zero, essentially.
Well,
even if you have the previously activated cells, as long as you increase your concentration, I mean, it's the same thing. You can't talk about a cell being previously activated because you only activated to a particular level. If you saturated all the receptors, then you're going to get no additional response just by raising it. And if you're subsaturating, all you're doing is increasing receptor occupancy. So it's not interesting. You can't talk about having a previously activated cell.
Okay, I think if you're talking about adaptation, this is definitely not addressing adaptation. So if you do this and you wait minutes.
About adaptation. I'm talking about changing the concentration. As long as you raise the concentration of cyclic AMP, the cell senses the difference between a previous concentration and that concentration.
Yes.
So if you killed this thing, so you've now... Are you looking? You're changing the concentration. You're increasing the concentration slightly on one side versus the other.
After raising it at a certain level. So what?
Yeah, no,
I'm saying it doesn't matter.
That's fine. But if you have it at a certain level.
Yes.
And then you increase it.
Yes.
What you're doing is the cell is measuring that differential. It doesn't matter if you already have.
Well, we think it does matter.
Right?
It does matter. That's our claim.
Sometime, right?
Right.
Sorry?
There's still an... Right, I think you're right. So if you do this within a certain amount of time, we claim you will not see a response of the cell. The cell will not respond. Right? That's our essence.
So, Rick, adaptation takes a certain amount of time, right? It doesn't instantaneously adapt. Right? It takes whatever time it takes to adapt the cyclic AMP.
Yeah, a lot. Okay, what are the time... When you're talking about... Maybe I didn't understand the experiment. When you're talking about having the cells...
Seconds. Not minutes, of course. You're right. Then the cell has time to adapt. Then your pH may be already off the membrane.
If you do it so fast, then it probably won't be able to distinguish between the fact that it even saw a flash radiant beforehand.
What do you mean? Then you can leave it for minutes once you drop one in. You bounce it up within 1 second,
right.
You drop one in and move it. And then you leave it like that for minutes. Then see if you get that over the ridge.
You can think about it, you just turn the gradient off. Something came, you're dropping. Maybe you just do the same experiment with 2 needles and take one away.
Yeah, I think you could right. Okay, all right. I'm glad this is generating discussion here. All right, so now the second part of the predictions is specific to cyclic GMP. So if cyclic GMP is the inhibitor, then if you have a mutant, cyclic GMP mutant, which are available, then the pH domain protein localization pattern should be different. That is not verified yet, as I know. Also, of course, we believe that this initial asymmetry is important for chemotaxis. So these mutants should not chemotax properly. And that has been shown recently. And finally, if you manage to pretreat the cells with cyclic GMP, so you manage to bring in cyclic GMP in the cell and then give it a stimulus, you should not see any response because you have first saturated the receptors with the inhibitor, and therefore you shouldn't see any response.
That's not a test of your model, it's a test of the assumptions of your model.
Well, the assumption that cyclic GMP is the inhibitor. Yes, okay, right. Okay. All right, so I have maybe 7 minutes left. So I just want to say this, and I know the biologists will not care about this whatsoever, but that's all right. We did this via finite modeling, and I might be very biased, but I just don't like finite element modeling. First of all, because in higher dimension, i.e. 3 dimensions, it becomes computationally somewhat costly. And also, eventually, when we're about to collect our social security, we might be looking at shape changes, right? And then if you have a cell that is actually changing its shape, and then you want to do this in finite element, it's going to be really difficult, because every time you change the shape of the cell, you have to regrid your computational domain, and it's really not very pleasant. So an alternative would be to use a particular technique called phase field modeling, which some of you might be familiar with. And it's been used in the physics community for free boundary modeling with quite a bit of success. So the idea is the following, that you have your cell here. This is your interior, your exterior. And you introduce another field, an auxiliary field, that is taking on one value in the interior, one value in the exterior, and diffusing rapidly across the boundary, which is the membrane. Okay. And then you can see that, or you can show, and you can also verify, that if you include this phase field in your diffusion equation, you can actually satisfy the no-flux boundary conditions quite well. Essentially, this is because your diffusive interface here is very small. Yeah? And what's more than that, since you want to say something about what's happening at the membrane, you want to, for example, produce things at the membrane, you can include that too, because, for example, if you take the derivative of the phase field and you square it, you get a very nice localized peak at the membrane, which you then can also put in your equations. And this equation, of course, only is going to be active at the membrane. Yeah? So this is a computational trick of using a phase field. And then you can just use finite difference with a uniform grid. You don't have to do any kind of regridding, which is a lot nicer. So we did this in two dimensions. We checked that it is quantitatively OK, and it is. So I'm just going to show you a little movie of 3D at all. So what I did here is it's an ellipsoid. It's actually a prolate spheroid. So it's a sphere, and I pull it on one direction. So one radius is larger than the other one, the other two. And this is my computational box. And I give it a cyclic AMP pulse from one face. And then I'm going to see what happens. And, well, something happens, of course. So what I show here is this is my cell here again. This is a plane through the cell, which is showing the cyclic AMP levels. So it's diffusing from this side to that side. This is the color coding here. Shows the activated state at the membrane of the cell. Red is activated and blue is not activated. So you can see that the front is activated while the back is not activated. And this is a cutout of the cell which shows that the cyclic GMP is produced at the interior of the cell and is diffusing towards the back of the cell, inhibiting the cell. Okay. All right, so that's, I think, essentially all that I have to say here. So in summary, so this model is addressing only the first few seconds. However, we think it's important to address these first few seconds already, because we need to explain why you can have an asymmetry in such a short time. It requires an internal messenger that is diffusing rapidly. We think it might be cyclic GMP in Dicti, and we've given some specific predictions which could verify or not verify the model. And I'm very curious to see if Chris has done any two-pipette experiments. So he has been teasing us a little bit, so we'll see what he does tomorrow. Okay, thank you.
Any more questions or discussions?
If you can actually simulate the pipette introduced as done in all these experiments, what happens?
I don't think it's different. Makes a huge difference if you have a pipette or a plane.
Well, it's here the pulse comes and manages the pipette will establish the
initial. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, no, we've done that also. We have just kept the cyclic AMP source on. It doesn't matter.
What
you can also.
Do you inject the little cyclic AMP?
In the cell?
In real life or in the model?
So there's about to be in the real world.
Well, that's one of the predictions that we said. We asked people to do this. So,
amazed how many cells are killed with a really good neurobiologist.
Okay, it's difficult, but there are some techniques of getting cyclic GMP in the cell, and they're working on it. Yes, absolutely, I agree. Yeah.
Okay, now, so thank you all for surviving till 5. Two announcements. One, for those of you who didn't hear, at 5:30 there's wine and cheese over in the common room over there. And tomorrow morning we are starting at 9 a.m.